So this is my last sermon in our series on Isaiah. So I think it's Owain that will be taking us next week, looking at chapter 12. So we're finishing our series for the time being at there. So in looking for like preparation for this sermon, I was trying to find events which changed the world, that changed the planet. And many of the articles that I looked at, some that came up, you would definitely agree with things that basically changed the course of history. And there were massive events. So out of the things that I looked at here, some of them you would agree with, some of them perhaps you won't agree with. So I wrote 10 things that changed the world, but I probably won't say all of them. So, and they're not in order of importance whatsoever. So 9/11, the terrorist attacks on the World Trade Center, that changed, apparently, the world. The birth of Muhammad, the birth of Jesus, it's good to know that's on there. The Reformation, and you might think I'm biased putting that on there, but the Reformation didn't just have kind of spiritual significance, but it had massive political influence as well, across not just Europe, but across continents. The medical revolution, the invasion of Poland by Germany, the invention of the printing press, the invention of the internet, the release of Nelson Mandela, and the Berlin Wall being brought down. These events, huge things. And there's certainly things that I would like to add to that list, perhaps you would as well. But throughout what we're going to be looking at now, I'm going to be looking at 3 points. And throughout this, I want us to see a nation. I want us to see a planet that will be completely transformed, which will make some of those other points that we just read look insignificant as a result. And so far from Isaiah, we've looked at perhaps a lot of judgment throughout this book. Perhaps you've been thinking, it's judgment, judgment, judgment. But throughout kind of Isaiah 1 to 12, there's a theme of guilt, hope, guilt. And so you see kind of this hope, you see this grace given through judgment in chapters 2, 4, 7, and the famous chapter in chapter 9. You see massive bits of hope and grace given there in spite of the judgments. And despite all this unfaithfulness from God's people, despite all this unfaithfulness from Judah, from Israel, God is still sovereign. We looked at that with Ben preaching a couple of weeks ago. God is in control. He's sovereign. And this continues now with the great hope and the great message that we have here in Isaiah 11. And there's 3 things that I want us to look at. And the first point is going to be a lot longer than the other two. So you don't think, I can't get to the end of the first point. You'd be like, this is going on some time. So, but yeah, just so you're aware of that. But the first point is the perfect king. Perfect king, verses 1 to 5. And this point is going to be longer because I want to do a bit of history with this point. I want us to look at Israel's heritage and before that as well, since the creation of the world. Since the creation of the world, we've had a representative. We've had a federal head. We've had, in a way, a king. From the very beginning, we find our first representative. We find Adam in the Garden of Eden. He was placed as the head of creation. In a way, he was lord over it. He was king over it. But as we know, with Adam, this kind of false king, but nevertheless our representative, he failed in the garden. And everything has changed as a result. Adam brought spiritual and physical death. We see that in Genesis 3, next to that tree, with Adam and Eve and the serpent in the garden. That's where our problem started. And in Genesis, it goes on there at the beginning of Genesis 3, and then we get to verse 15 in Genesis 3, and we catch perhaps a glimpse there of a hope that will ultimately come, that will reverse this cycle of the fall, and that will bring the people rest, and who will bring the people peace. So every time when we in our Bibles, when we're going through, every time we get to a major figure in the Bible, we're going to be thinking, is this the person to help us? Is this the person who's going to reverse that cycle? Perhaps we read the genealogies and we get bored and we think, well, we shouldn't get bored. We're meant to be thinking, for every name that we read, we're meant to be thinking, is this the person that will bring us hope? Is this the person who will ultimately bring us peace? So we look at these major figures, we get to Noah. Noah's name means rest. Is he the person that will bring us rest and will bring us peace? No. God had a different plan. So we see great people like Abraham, Isaac, Moses, Jacob, and although they're used by God, they ultimately fail, and that curse that we see in Genesis 3 deepens, and peace isn't found. And then in our home groups, on a Tuesday and a Wednesday, we've been looking at the life of David, and at our very first home group, you might have looked at 1 Samuel chapter 8, where it's Israel asking God for a king. They ask Samuel, or they more or less demand a king. God warns them against that. God warns them, saying, if you go for a king, he'll lead you astray. Yet the people demand it, and God gives them what they ask for. They ask for this king, this representative. And that first king we meet is Saul. He's strong, he's mighty, he's big. Is he the one that we've been waiting for? 1 Samuel 15 says to Saul, you have rejected the word of the Lord, and the Lord has rejected you from being king over Israel. So we move on. We get to David. David is different, isn't he? We've looked at that in our studies. And he's a man who's after God's own heart. But as we'll see in David's life, in our next studies, we will see his life wasn't tipped up. And actually, he committed some of the major and most serious sins that we see in the Old Testament. Yet God was able to use him. And as we saw from our studies last week, this last week on Tuesday and Wednesday, actually God, he says that promise again. He reminds us of his promise that he will send someone, a true and better king, who will be born in David's line. We read that in our studies this week. So in David's line, who do we get to next? Solomon. We get to Solomon. And it says in 1 Kings 11, so Solomon did what was evil in the sight of the Lord and did not wholly follow the Lord. So, no. We wait, and we wait, and we wait, and we wait. And after Solomon, the kingdom, God's people, ended up splitting into the northern kingdom and the southern kingdom. And the people cried out in 1 Kings 12, we have no inheritance in the sons of Jesse. Jesse was King David's father, and they're saying, we have no hope in this line. We have no inheritance in this. And the thing is, it looks like they're right. Person after person, king after king, failed. Everyone's still represented under Adam and that first curse. And then we get to Isaiah chapter 1. Isaiah chapter 1, verse 1. It says that the whole book of Isaiah travels throughout the reigns of four kings, who are Uzziah, Jotham, Ahaz, and Hezekiah. We've seen the three first kings. We haven't got to Hezekiah yet. So was there any hope with those first three? Uzziah says in 2 Chronicles 26, he was strong and he grew proud to his destruction, and he was unfaithful to the Lord his God. Jotham, his son, is there any hope there? And Jotham is a bit different, actually. In 2 Chronicles 27, it says he did what was right in the eyes of the Lord, but the people still followed corrupt practices. He might have done what was right in the eyes of the Lord, but he wasn't able to bring that rest. He wasn't able to bring that peace that we heard about in Genesis 3:15. And then Ahaz, this is the king we're with at the moment in Isaiah 11. It says in 2 Kings 16, He did not do what was right in the eyes of the Lord his God, as his father David had done, but he walked in the ways of the kings of Israel. So this is the point we're at now. We can look back at the history. It doesn't look too good, does it? And the people can cry out, "We have no inheritance in the sons of Jesse. We have no hope in this line." Our problem started with that first tree and with Adam, and it's got worse. The curse has got deeper. We've had bright spots in the book, haven't we? In chapter 9, we have that great Christmas passage of Emmanuel, God with us, Prince of Peace. And then here in chapter 11, verse 1, we get to this. There shall come forth a shoot from the stump of Jesse, a branch from his root shall bear fruit. So we're back to the stump of Jesse. Here the people, what God is saying here is, throughout this chapter 11, is God saying, "I have not forgotten my promises to you. I have not forgotten you." And in verses 1 to 5 here, we read about a completely different rule, a completely different reign. Yeah, the people said, "We have no hope, we have no inheritance in the sons of Jesse." And God's like saying, "Yes, in a sense, in one way you don't. That family tree was awful. They all failed in one way or another. Every king have failed, and like a tree, they have been felled. They have been cut down." So take a look at this king in verses 1 to 5. In verse 1, we have that old tree, that rotting tree that has been cut down. But out of that stump, there's this branch which has grown out of it. Where other kings, where other people have declined and died, this branch will bear fruit. This is what it says there in verse 1, it will bear fruit. And we see this kind of kingly reign here. The Spirit of the Lord shall rest upon him. We read there about his wisdom and understanding, which is utterly different to the kings that we've seen in Isaiah so far. With verse 4, we read about his righteousness, justice for the poor and weak, something that the other kings had failed to do. And again, with the empty words of kings before, this king that will come, this representative, just look at the power of his words. At the end of verse 4, it says, "And he shall strike the earth with the rod of his mouth. He will, and with the breath of his lips, he shall kill the wicked." Injustice, wickedness, oppression will be no more. Some of us have been reading and praying this week for our brother, Dan Walker, in the news. He's the BBC presenter who's got that new job doing the BBC breakfast show. But he's come under huge criticism from the media, national newspapers, criticising this man for his Christian views on Sunday for creation. But our brother Dan, and for us as well, we need to remember that injustice, wickedness, oppression will be no more. Things will be set right. And lastly, before we move on to our next points, this king will be equipped. Again, in Isaiah, anyone and everyone could have been a leader. In chapter 3, it says, "You have a cloak. You can be our leader." What tragic qualifications to be a leader, to be a representative. But here, look down at verse 5. "Righteousness shall be the belt of his waist, faithfulness the belt of his loins." This perfect king, he will be equipped, he will be qualified to lead the people. Whereas before, perhaps the people were right to shout out, "There's no inheritance here." Now, as that great hymn says, "Hail to the Lord anointed, great David's greater son." It's talking about Jesus, and that Jesus is now here, that perfect king. So point one, the perfect king. Point two, the perfect peace. And again, looking back at Adam and creation in Genesis, one of the massive problems that Adam brought was the whole of creation got knocked out of joint, wasn't it? And God said in Genesis 3, "Cursed is the ground because of you." But look what this new King Jesus, look at what his reign will usher in verses 6 to 9. Look down at verse 6 there. "The wolf shall dwell with the lamb, the leopard shall lie down with the young goat, and the calf and the lion and the fattened calf together." Often we shorten this down to, "The lion shall lie down with the lamb." That's a well-known saying now. This is that creation which got ruined because of the curse. This is Eden restored. And if you're thinking, well, it's not like that now. You've been to the zoo, you don't see lions lying down with lambs. It can't be talking about now. In Isaiah 9, we read about Emmanuel, God with us, that great Christmas passage there. And that does focus on the birth of Christ. But here in chapter 11, we're looking at the kingly rule. So that is what Jesus will establish when he comes again. So these promises are for us. We're looking forward to Jesus returning again. So this is as true for us today as it was when Isaiah first wrote these words. I'd like to say we are in a more privileged position. We are able to look back at Christ and his cross. So we can look back at the cross. So we can look to the future and see that that has been guaranteed because of what Jesus has done. The lion shall lie down with the lamb. And it's talking about this ultimate peace. And let's be honest, it sounds pretty ridiculous, doesn't it? A lying down with a lamb. It's unnatural, we think. And Woody Allen famously said, "The lion will lay down with the lamb, but the lamb won't get much sleep." And it's perhaps ridiculous to think about this. Lions can't be tamed. What possibly could bring about such a cosmic reversal? And again, Isaiah points us towards the future. When this true king comes, when this true king reigns, he will set the earth right. And this isn't some distant dream that will never live up to reality. It's not like something when you've planned an event, you're looking forward to it, and it finally gets to that day, and it never lives up to expectation. This, in a sense, this isn't a distant dream. This is a reality which will come. Isaiah is telling us there will be a day when wolves and lambs will graze together. Creation will be put back into joint, and not just in Jerusalem, not just in Judah, but the whole earth. Christ will be known. His rule will be experienced everywhere. And the encouragement for us is that we need to look beyond the disappointment of our own age and look to that age that will come in the future. So with that false king, Adam, he brought two things. He brought spiritual death and physical death. But Christ, his rule, his reign, his kingdom, Christ is more powerful than Adam. And his victory is more powerful than Adam's loss. Adam brought spiritual and physical death, and therefore Isaiah is pointing us to the future, where towards this king who will bring spiritual and physical life. So we've been reading about and learning about Adam and that one tree. That's where our problems started, but our problems ended at another tree, with Christ himself nailed to that tree. And as he's nailed to that tree, remember the sign that was put above his head. The King of the Jews, the true King. And there, he was forsaken, so we may never be forsaken. Over the last few weeks, we've been praying for those who are ill. We had a prayer meeting a couple of weeks back for those who are struggling with their health. We've been praying for them, we'll continue to pray for them. But what we need to know is that whatever we're going through now, that if you trust in Christ, you're not forsaken. And actually, there is an end in sight. There is this peace that is to come as well. And if you trust in the gospel tonight, we have a physical hope. We have a spiritual hope. Death has been defeated. Wars vanished. Disease abolished. And nature itself, as we've seen, brought to peace as well. So, the perfect king, verses 1 to 5. The perfect peace, verses 6 to 9. And the last bit here, point 3. The perfect kingdom, verses 10 to 16. And again, this point is looking towards this future return of Christ. When we read here, it says in verse 11, to recover that remnant. And in verse 12, it says to gather the dispersed of Judah. Some people think that actually this is people just returning to the land after wars have finished. It's people returning from exile. But it can't mean that. It's talking about one final kind of gathering of God's people. This is God establishing his kingdom, establishing his throne. And we read here in verses 11 and 12 about, look at the names and locations there, where we've got Assyria, Egypt, Pathros. And this is basically just showing us God's people have been completely spread out. They've been completely dispersed. A few weeks back in our studies in James, James begins his letter with to those in the dispersion, those people who've been spread out. 1 Peter starts the same way. So to those Christians throughout the world, those who have been dispersed. So as God's people, whether we're sitting here in church tonight, whether we're in church in North Korea, whether we're in church in Australia, in Africa, we're God's people. And wherever we are, when Jesus returns, God will bring us to himself. We'll be gathered in as his kingdom. And this is this gathering that we're talking about here in verses 10 to 16. God gathering the people to himself for that last time. And the last thing I want to bring out here is if we look down at those verses 11 to 16, look at the references to Egypt there. As we look at those references, it's clear that God's people, when the people in Isaiah's day, when they read this, they were meant to look back to the time of rescue from Egypt, when they were held in slavery in Egypt and God rescued them from that situation. They were meant to look back on that and realize that God hasn't forgotten them, that he will fulfill the promises to them. When we look down at verse 11 there, it says, God, the Lord will extend his hand yet a second time to recover the remnant. The first time was God saving his people from Egypt. That first kind of saving act. God is saying he will do that again. In verses 15 and 16, it says, the Lord will utterly destroy the tongue of the Sea of Egypt. And the last verse that we look at there, the last line, and there was, and for the remnant that remains of his people, as there was for Israel when they came up from the land of Egypt. Again, there's referencing Egypt there. You're talking about the Sea of Egypt, when God divided that sea so the people could be safe. God's delivering his promises. God made a way for his people then, and he will do it again. That's what he's saying here. And this is all to say for us now, reading this in 2016, that perhaps we're not too different from the people reading in Isaiah's day. We're still waiting for this kingdom. We're still waiting for this peace. We're still waiting for many of these promises to be fulfilled. And in a sense, we're still people living in the middle of the book, aren't we? Just as God's people Israel looked back at being saved from slavery in Egypt, we now look back at not being slave from being saved from slavery in Egypt, but being saved from slavery of sin. We look back to the cross of Christ. We read about God's people in the wilderness. And us now, we are wilderness people. We too, like Israel, look back for the hope in the future as well. So we're people who live in the middle of the book. We look back to Christ, but we haven't yet got to the promises there in Revelation 21. And if we look at the language there in verses 15 and 16, it is God, isn't it? It is the Lord who led his people out of Egypt. At the end of verse 15 there, it says, he will lead people across in sandals. It is God who led the people out of that slavery. It's God who was with the people there in the wilderness. And people in the wilderness then, they suffered. And we suffer here today as well. People in the wilderness were fed by God, weren't they? And again, with us now, we're fed by God and his words. So we're people who are living in the middle of this book. There's still promises that are going to be fulfilled for us. And during this time of wilderness for us, we must realize that God is still our Father. That Christ still is our King. He has not abandoned you. And the wilderness that we face now, like God's people back then, the wilderness that we face now is not a sign that he doesn't love us. It's a sign that he does love us. In our wilderness, in our illnesses, in our trials, in our persecutions, in our anxiety, in our despair, it's difficult. But like God's people here, we're to look back. And we need to remember, we need to look forward as well towards that kingdom, towards that peace which has already been purchased for you by that perfect King. So when we look back, we see there's no record of sin. When we look down, there's no fear of hell. When we look in, the Bible tells us we find the peace of God which surpasses understanding. When we look around us, Romans tells us that he's working all things together for good. And when we look onwards, we see that Christ is coming to take us home. Heaven, this kingdom, is awaiting us. And the thing that is awaiting us there is the perfect King, the perfect peace, and the perfect kingdom.